I'd like to open with a quote from Thomas Merton. Does anybody know who he is? Scholar and...
mystic.
Yeah, it's a mystic that's somewhat, he reminds me of Thomas Aquinas sometimes in the way he talks about nature. And I think this is a good place to think about nature and how we pray by just walking through daily life without words. And it's impossible not to pray when you're walking up to Holden Lake and you're thinking about the beauty of nature that God's put here for us. Okay, Thomas Merton said, "There is not a flower that opens, not a seed that falls into the ground, and not an ear of wheat that nods on the end of its stalk in the wind that does not preach and proclaim the greatness and the mercy of God to the whole world. There is not an act of kindness or generosity, not an act of sacrifice done, nor a word of peace and gentleness spoken, not a child's prayer uttered that does not sing hymns to God before his throne and in the eyes of men and before their faces." So what is that saying to us? Anybody? What can you get out of that? Can you tell me something besides what I, just the obvious that I just spoke? I should get you in small groups like we have.
I think you need to read it again.
What I can glean from it is God is aware of everything we do. Little children drawing crayon pictures. It's the same thing as us trying to be elaborate in a prayer at church. God's awareness and understanding versus our small ability to communicate with God. But he notices everything about it, us, and the small things that we do. Not a sacrifice done or a word of peace and gentleness spoken nor a prayer, child's prayer uttered that does not sing hymns to God before his throne. So there are so many places in the Bible that talk about singing and dancing praise to God. And how do we make that authentic other than just dogma? You know, a lot of times we'll sit through our usual church and talk the talk, and it appalls me how often I'm going, yeah, I've heard that one before, yeah, I agree with it. But you don't really get into it. You don't really feel how important how authentic those words really are. Words sometimes diminish the meaning, and language is limited. So I'm trying to bring in an option here besides use of language. Some people talk about therapeutic prayer, and I think it has its place. Therapeutic prayer helps identify and express our thoughts and feelings and conflicts and strengths, and that's used a lot in situations like I was explaining to you about where I was working as an art therapist. Being an introvert or being introspective is really important when you're working through some things. I have some books here that I've used with clients. Like this one is pretty neat, called Writing Down the Bones. How many people have ever kept journals? It can get pretty nasty. You start digging around inside of yourself and go, oh, okay, I can use that in a story. Or it can be finding out, starting to notice what's right in front of you and writing about it and appreciating it. I think that's where artists start. They see what's right in front of them and they start appreciating and trying to find another language in which to express it besides words. And I don't want to put down the written word or the spoken word, but dance, music is probably the biggest one. That I think music is hardwired into all of us emotionally. And things like Walking the Labyrinth, I've got a lot of books on that. I enjoyed what this one, a lot of these labyrinth books, I call woo-woo books. But, you know, there can be a lot of levels of spirituality. But does anybody know what I'm saying when I say?
Yeah.
That sounds really flippant, but most of us are comfortable with prayer, but many of us are uncomfortable with prayer. We're afraid we will do it wrong or our requests will be refused. As we move through the labyrinth, we can move between silence and image. The act of prayer can become playful and joyous. The opening to the sacred is profound, life-changing, and a process. It frees enormous energy that needs to be channeled back into the world of service. If the focus is back to the self, then the act of seeking can become an addiction. It can become a self-reinforcing system that does not lead to the spiritual maturity of the seeker. So I guess where I'm going with this is that art isn't just necessarily for it. Sometimes it is just for yourself, and you don't share it, but it's meant to be shared. The Western world and the world and the power of the human has been given free rein in our tradition. Prayer has become an act of will, which in some traditions lead to a prayer as a form of self-discipline. This is a severe distortion of the purpose of prayer. It has injured many people, and they've learned to blame themselves when their prayer life is not effective. So there are a lot of different ways of dealing with prayer. How does it affect you? And I like to think, and I used to tell people, I just pray all the time, all day, I'm talking to God. And it's not formal, and it isn't necessarily with words. So maybe that's because I'm one of those creative types that doesn't quite know how to put it into words. But this sounds really weird, but my husband and I wrote a grant for our school in dance at our school in northern Minnesota, which is really kind of isolated. Dance? What does dance have to do with anything? But we had some very wise teachers, and they told us they'd give us things like prompts of words that had meaning, and they would say, how would you express a color? How would you express concerns without words? How do you express longing or hope, relationships, poverty, joy, fear, distance, sickness, thankfulness? When you go to a university and see modern dance, it's real evident how they're able to do that. Not like all of us are going to jump out and start dancing during the service, but anyway. I wanted to have you start by looking at, find my notes here, Samuel, 2 Samuel 6, verses 12 through 15. First of all, I got to tell you, we all know in Genesis 1, God created us in His image, which means it's God. Genesis 1 is all about creating, and it says it was good. We are created as creating beings. We're the only things that create. God creates, we create. We should look at that as a gift. This also applies to how we communicate and how we pray. So let's take a look at what David did. Does anybody want to read that for me? It's verses 12 through 15. You just go ahead. Somebody who's bold.
Would you say the 2 Samuel.
Yeah, 2 Samuel 6, 12 through 15.
Now King David was told, the Lord had blessed the household of Obed-Edom and everything he had because of the Ark of God. So David went to bring up the Ark of God from the house of Obed-Edom to the city of David with rejoicing. When those who were carrying the Ark of the Lord had taken six steps, he sacrificed a bull and a fattened calf. Wearing a linen ephod, David was dancing before the Lord with all of his might, while he and all in Israel were bringing up the Ark of the Lord with shouts and sounds of trumpets.
Okay, that's a celebration. Can you imagine the priest getting up in front and dancing with all his might? Well, that's a real sign of joy and connection to God, our God. I'm not talking about only dancing. I wanted to give examples of visual artists and other people as well. But like I said, my hard drive is shot. I wanted to show some neat pictures. So bear with me if I get off track, but I'd like to start by saying we are living animals. We use our five senses, but humans have the ability to reflect on the experiential. We are multidimensional and multicultural. We choose or are limited in how we express ourselves according to both personal preferences and abilities and by what appeals to us culturally. People around the world express themselves in the same way, even though cultures may differ, through our various senses. People find commonality in rituals and symbolism. That's something that comes up over and over again. You'll see it all over in churches and mosques, and rituals and symbolism is something that humans love, and it helps them remember how it's supposed to go. Something familiar with them, such as liturgy in churches, for instance, we enjoy and empathize with creations and emotions of others by paying attention with our senses. This is part of the way we can connect with other people, is through communal activities like ritual. We feel comfortable when we walk into a cathedral and see familiar symbols and hear familiar sounds like Gregorian chants. There are other types of religions that fly the Tibetan prayer flags, Orthodox waving of incense, that's another sense that we use that brings an emotion and a meaningful connection, beating of rhythms on drums. We have languages, but research and common sense, research goes on and on about stacks of it, that we communicate in very basic ways without language. We all laugh, cry, use body language, baby talk, all over the world is the same. Play games, celebrate, jump up and down, mourn, and so on. The same thing can happen when we walk through life with God. Creativity is our God-given creativity is our God-given ability to create. And a lot of us deny that. But we do it in everyday life just by the choreography of living. We have to solve problems and be creative. It's all around us, and we may take it for granted as a method of telling or reflecting the Word of God. But we use creativity to tell about ourselves, who we are, how we're doing, what we're feeling. Of course, there's the official arts, dance, theater, visual arts, creative writing, electronic media, architecture, reflecting or honoring what we think is important in life. But there's also gardening, clothing design, patchwork quilts, doing fireworks displays, that's also creativity and celebration. We all have creative abilities to share. Many people don't recognize their own abilities, but it's our duty to give back with the gifts we've received from God. Can somebody open Hebrews 13, verse 15? And maybe somebody else can look for Ecclesiastes 3, verse 4. Actually, we'll read verses 1 through 8 in Ecclesiastes. But let's start with Hebrews 13. Hebrews chapter 13, verse 15.
Verse 15?
Yeah.
Okay. Let us then always offer praise to God as our sacrifice through Jesus, which is the offering presented by lips that confess him as Lord.
Okay. And there are different versions of that, too.
Oh, yeah, I'm reading Good News.
Okay. And it's saying that we need to share. Don't neglect to do good and to share what you have, for sacrifice. For these sacrifices are pleasing to God. And that's, in my view, it's also talking about the arts and your gifts, whatever your gifts are. Okay, so Ecclesiastes. I bet everybody's heard this one, and I bet you can sing the song.
For everything, there is a season, a time for every matter under heaven, a time to be born, a time to die, a time to plant, and a time to pluck up what is planted, a time to kill, and a time to heal, a time to break down, and a time to build up, a time to weep, and a time to laugh, a time to mourn, and a time to dance, a a time to throw away stones and a time to gather stones together, a time to embrace and a time to refrain from embracing, a time to seek and a time to lose, a time to keep and a time to throw away, a time to tear and a time to sow, a time to keep silence and a time to speak, a time to love and a time to hate, a time for war and a time for peace.
Okay, we all know the song, right? Mm-hmm. Everything turn. Okay.
And we studied Ecclesiastes in a Bible study earlier this week.
Yeah, that's what I heard.
And the gentleman that was teaching in class attributed that to the Beatles and a bunch of old regenerate hippies like us, like
yeah.
me, said, no, birds. Peter Singer,
I think, was the first one that ever wrote that,
It's repeated, the idea is repeated several times, and there are opposites. And some people feel differently about that set of verses. Some people, it makes them feel hopeful, others, it makes them feel depressed. Why? You know? Everybody responds to it differently. So it depends on where you are in your life, I guess. That's something you look at for encouragement if you're down.
And this Peterson in the message, his the start of each of the line is a right time.
Mm-hmm. Good point.
I don't know, that makes it a little more negative to me. Because I think the time may not seem right, but there is a time for it.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's what it's a paraphrase. So.
Right, oh, I know.
Yeah. Well, it's hard to tell a depressed person that things will get better. And I've always looked at it as a really joyful verse, and I was shocked to hear some people thought it was really depressing. I should listen a little better.
Well, if you read the whole deal of mm-hmm. Ecclesiastes, all is vanity, and
yes.
he called it—I can't remember the term, the Greek or Hebrew.
Yeah, that's where this next verse comes in. If anybody could read Ecclesiastes 12-13, which is also repeated many times throughout the whole—I'm sure it'll sound familiar if you went to that other. They're referring to the teacher all the time, and who the teacher is disputed. They think it might be Solomon or somebody. Maybe you know more than I do. I was looking in a concordance, and they were...
That's more legend, I think.
Yeah, I think you're right. So anybody want to read? I can read it, too, if people don't want to. But Ecclesiastes...
What verse was it?
3:12-13.
I know that there is nothing better for people than to be happy and to do good while they live, that each of them may eat and drink and find satisfaction in all their toil. This is the gift of God.
Okay. How many people, I don't know, this generation is different, but how many people remember when dance was considered a... You probably don't want to do that in church.
Oh, yeah.
Well, they'll probably allow it.
Yeah.
My confirmation pastor said, well, you can dance other places,
I went to Concordia and Moorhead, and I was just at the tail end of when they were calling it dance games.
Social games,
Social games.
Well, with the Luther, it was not allowed.
Yeah. So I was looking up dance in... just a Google kind of a prayer religious site, well, more than one, and I was shocked. Not, I guess I shouldn't have been shocked. There's an awful lot of these that are warning you against dancing, even today. I was really disappointed that I couldn't find more on celebratory praise. That, just like in the Bible that David did, I was really struck by how much is about behavior and good and bad and bad dancing and good dancing.
It wasn't totally considered good in that dance.
Pardon me?
David wasn't totally considered good in that dance. His clothing wasn't quite sufficient.
Daughter complained that he was dancing in front of the maids.
Yeah.
Well, in those, in that cultural context, it was probably okay. But anyway, I'm not going to try to. I'm not.
Miriam danced.
Yeah, but it says he was dancing like mad before God, and I think that the same thing can apply to metaphorically to the way that we walk through life.
Well, you can express yourself through dance. I think the reason that so many religious articles like the ones you've been researching are negative is because dancing has been connected to some sexual activity or to the debauchery of the Greeks and the Romans as they were drinking wine and dancing.
Mm-hmm.
But as you know, you can express yourself through dance in many creative ways that are not in any way sexual.
Yeah.
It's creation.
It's probably a lot more about community and recognizing each other's emotions and needs. When you collaborate in a choreographed situation, you are connected, and harmony is appealing to us. It feels more like a community when we work together. It feels more like a community when your church council is agreeing on things rather than going against the grain. And so dancing is, especially, I like to use the example of the dances done in the kibbutz, where people work together, play together, have the same ends, and then they dance together, and it reinforces the community. It reinforces your goals to work together for God. Anyway, I just enjoyed the way Ecclesiastes, this guy, whoever he is, speaks highly of enjoying life. And there have been so many times in history where they're busy burning books and getting rid of paintings because they're inappropriate or things like that. So why art? Why art as a form of spiritual communication? People are naturally attracted to beauty. It's evident in ancient art in early humans who painted animals on caves, carved female fertility figures, invoked prayer or the spirit in some form, blessings for the hunt, prosperity, etc. Art is left as a record, not the words. They didn't have the words, but we can observe their humanness in their art. They had the same needs and desires. There's also a storytelling and teaching element in art. It's obvious in Native American teepees and early Christian icons where they're teaching and recording and telling stories. Another important function of our human spiritual art is remembering or immortalizing events or people. We pray through our beautiful war memorials in Washington, D.C., whether or not it's meant to be a prayer, it feels like a prayer to me. Or as the bereaved in the sculpted marble figures in the grave markers in Bologna in Italy. Has anybody ever been there?
No.
I went there with my daughter a couple of years ago. I flew her over to see a little bit of Italy with me when we were living in Cairo. Did I say I was in Cairo for 3 years?
Mm-hmm.
I had the opportunity to travel quite a bit and compare. You just can't help comparing cultures when you're running around. And it's so interesting to see how people memorialize their dead or celebrate an event. The mosaics of the martyrs in the ancient Egyptian monasteries are still there from 1500 years ago. It's got a story to tell. Of course, art can also be used as a method of propaganda, like the socialist worker movement in the former Soviet Union and Mexico. And we notice that art is used for the political news and for elections. It can be very coercive. So humans look for a connection to make things right and understandable. That's part of what art does. And that's why I think that electronic media has become so sophisticated. They're very good at pulling a multidimensional part of our thoughts together and making it all make sense. And that's not a bad thing. It's just another form of art. It's just an example, but we can also do the same thing through prayer. Okay, we talk about beauty and harmony, but what about anguish? What about pain and hopelessness? What about other negative human expressions? Art therapists can tell you a lot about this. Art is a tool to work through pain, just as it helps to write out the bones in a journal to move forward in healing. Harmony in visual art through the acuity of colors helps us to recognize and validate our feelings, whether positive or negative. The same goes for music, which seems to be the most hardwired of all arts into our emotions. How many people know Mozart's Requiem in D minor, the Mass? When you hear that, you just can't help but get goosebumps all over the place. It's so powerful. It's kind of scary, almost. It's about the extreme of intense human emotion. It was written in 1791. People haven't changed that much over the centuries. Why did he feel compelled to write such a scary and powerful piece? Anybody?
He was near death.
Yeah, he was near death. He was in conflict with his father. But I'm sure a lot of us feel like writing a piece like that if we could now and then. I think that's why we play it in the background sometimes. But why is it important for us to recognize these emotions in each other? That's part of the thing about communal arts, where we can share. Okay, so I said we contemplate and fight with our inner selves when we become introspective. Like Vincent van Gogh's self-portraits, he was focused on his own pain for years and years, struggled with mental illness. So why do humans focus on themselves? They're seeking answers, and sometimes it involves more than sitting still. People may paint it out, dance it out, act it out, write it out, or do the spoken word, or create music. Kids in the cities may do graffiti all over the place. They have something to say, and they want people to hear what they have to say, but they may not have words for it. Who hasn't heard a song like a broken-hearted prayer? There are so many things like that that really grab you, but you couldn't put it into words. And then there are the external ills in the world. Pablo Picasso's research and reaction to the Spanish Civil War, Guernica, shows the tragedies of wars suffered and things that were inflicted on individuals, especially innocent civilians. The work maintained monumental status, becoming a perpetual reminder of the tragedies of war, and became an anti-war symbol and the embodiment of peace. Everybody know what the Guernica mural looks like? It's a giant cubist piece full of suffering. Anyway, his tour of that piece helped bring the Spanish Civil War to the world's attention. We can look at things as a political bully pulpit, or it can be viewed as a cry of anguish to God. It depends upon the artist's intent. It depends upon who's viewing it. Okay, and I really wanted to focus on our journey together. We perform compassion through art. It's prayer without words. We may grieve or celebrate together by recognizing emotions and empathy. Art helps us tie together and recognize our mutual needs. I'd like to show you a picture in a book, and I wish that I had... I wish I had my PowerPoint, but I don't. I'm going to show you this one. This is a fresco of Greek women dancing, very old. And it's celebrating the escape of Adriandi from Crete. And this has become a dance that's still done in Greece. It's like a basket dance, a long line of women holding hands behind each other. So you're not holding the hands of the person next to you. You're actually holding the hands of the person next to them. I was going to make everybody get up and try it and see how it feels. It's actually really a nice feeling because you're all just walking together, supporting each other. And that's a physical manifestation of an art, and it's done to a tune that I can't pronounce. I think it's Toscanos. And I was going to play you a bit of that music, but I think I might run out of time here. How many people have done any kind of dance where they feel a community to the with the people that you're dancing with? It's just they used to do it a lot more in most cultures, and we're losing that art, especially in North America. It's not done very much anymore. It's meant to strengthen our communities, and it's a healthy way to get people together.
I think you get some of that same feeling in concerts, too.
Yeah.
That collective consciousness.
Mm-hmm. You're right about that.
Yeah.
I was going to say, art transcends boundaries. God's spirit breaks out of the narrow channels that we put them in a box into. You know, we confine what's comfortable to us an awful lot of the time. With creeds and specific interpretations of scripture. But the Spirit of God can't be captured, contained, shaped to a purpose, or tamed. I think that we had a minister in Egypt that spoke so eloquently about that, because he was very much into what you say, you know. My husband is sitting in the back over here. Paul Gordon Chandler was talking a lot about interfaith dialogue and what we all have in common. The Spirit is out there for everybody. And of course, now I can't find this quote, but here it is. No, it's not.
Well, I was just thinking about that International Folk Dance Weekend in Door County. I'm not a dancer, by the way. Never been very comfortable with dance. But Anne and I, she dragged me to this. She took me to an International Folk Dance Weekend in Door County, Wisconsin. And at the end of the weekend, I was actually dancing in a long line of 100 people that were dancing out to a dock and then doing a line dance back to a big fire.
As the sun was setting
over
the lake.
Just wonderful. Like, I am actually doing this? I couldn't believe I was doing that, but it was a community that had gotten together and we were one with one another. It was a wonderful expression.
One of the things that Paul Gordon says about communing as through the Holy Spirit is not only he's talking about Pentecost, but it's a lot of different things. Not only does Pentecost change the way one sees God, but it changes the way we see others, regardless of who they are. And I think that happens when we do art together, experience art, music, whatever form together. So through our senses, in the choreography of our lives, combinations of multiple creative and sensual experiences, those senses, feelings, thoughts, associations, prayers using words, or expressed in other creatively compassionate ways. We cry out to God in prayer, and sometimes in ways we cannot express in prayer. Can somebody please look up Romans 8, verse 26? This one I think is so wonderful.
Size to need for words.
Yeah, you got it. You must be a minister.
No.
Or you studied a lot better than I did. Okay. I've got too many sticky tabs in my Bible and I'll let somebody else look it up. Would somebody like to read that?
8:26.
I have it.
Okay.
Likewise, the Spirit also helpeth our infirmities. For we know not what we should pray for as we ought, but the Spirit itself maketh intercession for us with groaning which cannot be uttered.
Okay. I have a different translation, and I'm sure they all say the same thing. But the Spirit intercedes with sighs too deep for words. And I think that's the way it is for many of us when we're suffering or don't quite know what to say. Even when you're overwhelmed with the beauty of hiking up into the mountains, you don't know what to say. There's nothing that you can say that will embody what you're feeling or being thankful for. Lots of people have been troubled with words or have trouble with words. Like I said, the developmentally disabled, mentally ill, physically disabled, traumatized, very sick, very young, very old. And there is a lot of research about body physiology and how art heals. I've got some interesting articles here that I peeled off the internet last night as examples. And it is true that when you're working with art, it tends to help you work through your issues, whether you're talking to yourself, talking to God, talking to a therapist. But I like to think that people are communing with God all the time when they're working on trying to straighten things out in their life. But this is some research that is fairly worth listening to. How does art heal? Scientific studies tell us that art heals by changing a person's physiology and attitude. The body's physiology changes from one of stress to one of deep relaxation, from one of fear to creativity and inspiration. Art and music put a person in a different brainwave pattern. Art and music affect a person's autonomic nervous system, their hormonal balance, and their brain neurotransmitters. So part of it is getting into that mode and trying to think expressively when you're talking with God. Not to God necessarily, with God, being open to it. In fact, it is known by neuropsychologists that art, prayer, and healing all comes from the same source in the body. They're all associated with similar brainwave patterns, mind changes that are deeply connected with feeling and meaning. Art, prayer, and healing all take us to our inner world, the world of imagery and emotion, of visions and feelings. Healing resources are needed to be freed to allow our immune system to operate optimally, and that is always how we heal. So it isn't just medicine that does it. I'm not saying don't take your medicine, but and there are lots of artists who work for hospitals. Maybe you've been in chapels and foyers of hospitals where they have huge art installations, and pieces are put there with the intent of helping people focus on that. Pieces are deeply healing and used by cancer patients as meditations. Walking through an exhibition of life-size figures, sculptures can be calming and inspiring. People with illnesses and people on a spiritual path to heal go back to the roots of transformation and power when they're talking to God about, it's a meditation, I would say, probably more than a prayer. There are all kinds of healing artists, and there are examples here that are pretty interesting.
Yeah, could you say, since you lived in a Muslim country, and as I understand it, images and art is not...
It depends on what the images are.
Okay.
Culturally, they don't want you to draw a picture of people.
Right.
A lot of the stuff you'll see in Persia, and in Persia is better at showing things like flowers and trees and birds, and actually Egypt does too, depending on which culture you're talking to. There are about 5 different cultures of people or races of people in Egypt. It depends on whose imam is telling them what, but there's a lot of geometry. They put a lot of stock in their beautiful calligraphy, and they focus a lot on praising God in their calligraphy. My assistant at the school painted a nice painting for me before I left that said, Allah, creator of the heavens and the earth. And there are officially, what was it, 99 names for God or 100 names for God, something like that. And they're all beautiful calligraphy done in Arabic. So it's a way of appreciating, praising, and reminding ourselves through art. So I think a lot of it is learning compassionate ways of connecting with other people. Of course, we all know about Psalm 149 and 150, which is, let them praise his name with dancing, making melody with him, to him with tambourine and lyre. For the Lord takes pleasure in his people. He adorns the humble with victory. And it's kind of a doxology to the Psalms. And like I said, you can Google this and find all kinds of negative connotations to it, about and rules for behavior when it comes to dancing or performing. But artists and performers can transform a space for sacred celebration where love and healing can be manifest with beauty and symbolism. This also is recognized in all cultures through time. You will find these kinds of spaces in hospitals and churches, in the 30,000-year-old paintings in the caves of Lascaux, and in Get Well cards made by little kids with crayons. Think about the rose window in Notre Dame or the labyrinth on the floor of the Chartres Cathedral. Think about the intent of the people who planned the labyrinth at our own Holden Field. So I guess I would like to hear if anybody has some comments about...
I was just thinking of our Swahili service once a month, and in Columbus we have a Swahili service totally done by the people from Tanzania and Kenya and the people other places in our church. And I often go to it, partly because I teach a lot of them English, but also it's a new learning experience for me, because sometimes, and it's never planned, they will spontaneously all get up and start dancing around the church. Well, I mean, that's not something I do in my church. So it took me several times before I finally allowed myself to get up and dance with them, and they encouraged me, and it wasn't anything planned. I don't know, I still to this day, of course I didn't understand the Swahili, but I don't know what started it, and I don't know what stopped it. But it was quite an experience, the times I allowed myself.
It's a communal experience.
It is, definitely.
Yeah. And it's also a personal experience. There are so many ways of praying, and we all know the five different types of prayer we learned in confirmation. Prayer of praise and adoration, prayer of penitence, prayer of petition, thanksgiving, and intercession. And we probably overuse a couple of those. But I do prayer flags with families that come in down to the craft cave, and I try to explain to them about the tradition of the Nepalese or some of these different East Asian traditions with the prayer flags.
Are those ones out there? Were those your prayer flags?
Yeah, Jeannie took off with my idea, and I'm glad she did.
Oh.
That was with the kids. They did that. And traditionally, those kinds of prayer flags were used to promote peace, compassion, strength, and wisdom. The flags do not carry prayers to God. This is a common misconception, but we can use them however we want. Rather, the Tibetans believe the prayers and mantras will be blown through the wind and spread goodwill and compassion to all the pervading space. Isn't that sort of what we do when we put in stained glass in a church? Therefore, prayer flags are thought to bring benefit to all. By hanging the flags in high places, the Luang Ta will carry the blessings depicted on the flags to all beings. As the wind passes over the surface of the flags, which are sensitive to the slightest movement of the wind, the air is purified and sanctified by their mantras. The prayer of a flag becomes a permanent part of the universe as the images fade from exposure to the elements, just as life moves on and is replaced by new life. Tibetans renew their hopes in the world and by continually mounting new flags alongside the old. This symbolizes a welcoming of life's changes and acknowledgement that all beings are a part of a greater ongoing circle. Thought that was kind of neat. And I'm trying to incorporate that in prayers and concerns of families, and having little kids come in with their parents and make their own prayer flag, using their colors and symbolism, or not, just everybody has their own style. But I wanted to end with, and I will leave these books on the labyrinth and things out here. I really wanted to do this get-up thing, this basket thing, but I don't know if anybody's interested or not. Maybe I'll do it after we do our final prayer. But does anybody have something to add about experience and healing and art?
I think so often we're so into with art and dance and that, that people are reluctant to do it because it's so emphasis on the product. And I've got to be perfect. I've got to do this.
Yeah.
And I found I've used with people coloring. I say, here, here's a coloring book or something, so you don't have to worry about making something, but it's again that focus and that mindfulness of I'm getting away from this and de-stressing.
Yeah. That's I don't know if I should call it a misconception about art, but as an artist myself, I think of it more as a process rather than an experience, because you're going through adjustments as you go.
But you're so great, so many people are, I don't want to get into the dance, or I don't want to get into...
You want to be perfect before you start.
Because, and it goes back to childhood when, that is not a bird that you're drawing. It's a bird. So I think we've been brainwashed oftentimes. So.
It's our culture.
Our culture is really...
I think the other thing in our culture, it's everywhere, but I'm a little concerned about the electronic, the technological world, which has become so, the kids especially, and some adults, are so focused on that part of their lives. And of course, we know what happens in schools when there's no money. The first thing to go is the library and the music and the art, the arts. And so then we have this technological thing going on, and boy, I don't know. It just seems to me that those are the our culture has to get back to having seeing the importance of these things, because it just isn't all. You know what I'm saying. It's to me, I don't sit here and worry constantly about it, but I do think it's something that really the focus in America has always been bigger, better, all that sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. Let's, or this kid needs to learn to read.
Oh, yes, I agree with that. Some kids never learn how, though, and all we can do is get them to express themselves. Kids who are autistic or...
And creative writing, of course. That kind of thing helps, but there still isn't enough on the importance of the nice things of our culture.
If part of culture is defined by our ability to be more articulate in different ways, Brunel and I were lucky enough to land in Budapest last summer. In the middle of the St. Stephen's Festival, it was unplanned. There were groups of musicians and dancers and artisans from all over Eastern Europe there to celebrate in Budapest on the St. Stephen's holiday. And they all belong to an association called the Intangible Arts Association. So that is something that maybe we need to think about a little bit more, rather than the end product. Okay, now I have this painting in my house. Yes, a painting or a stained glass window or a labyrinth can remind you to think in a mindful, intentional way. But you also have to think about ways of being creative that are good for you, that aren't necessarily with an end product. And what you were saying about that. Who was saying about that? The end product thing. I think too much emphasis is put on that, so people give up before they start because they're kind of afraid. They're going
to
fail. You can't fail. Anyway, I'm going to put on the music. I was hoping you wouldn't leave because I think you're one of the dancers.
No, my husband is. He does contra. And I do it occasionally, but I've got to go tell stories.
Okay. Well, I'm going to play something called Mari Mariko. And if anybody... piece of music that's always done in a group. It's not couples or anything. But can I end with a prayer before I...
Before everybody escapes.
Yeah. Everybody's running away. Okay. This is a prayer for artists that some of you may have heard before. Bless the creators, O God of creation, who by their gifts make the world a more joyful and beautiful realm. Through their labors, they teach us to see more clearly the truth around us. In their inspiration, they call forth wonder and awe in our own living. In their hope and vision, they remind us that life is holy. Bless all who create in your image, O God of creation. Pour your spirit upon them, that their hearts may sing and their works be fulfilling. Amen. So, I'm going to play the music. If nobody wants to get up and dance, I'm going to dance all by myself.
Get your husband up.
This is just a community folk dance. Done by holding hands with the person past you. And it's really just a walk. And we are journeying together through life. And it's just walking back and forth, and it's basically reassuring people that we're all in it together, just like our friend says. It's just walking. And it's really. This was meant as a labyrinth dance. It's closely related to the labyrinth that was built nearby the city in Pulaplanese. Am I saying that right? Brunel, tell me. Pulaplanese. Is that how you say it? Yeah. But this is a labyrinth dance that's meant to bring people together in a community in remembrance and honor. So, but this is so common all throughout Eastern Europe. And I think it's a lovely way to tie people together. And it's one of those things you can't put your hands on. It's just an art. But thank you for coming.